The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clapp for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clapp. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Clapp.
And welcome to what promises to be a very interesting show. I have with me four ladies, starting with Sharon Yehesko-Oron, who's the Global Professional Development Director at Beit Izi Shavira, involved, I suppose, with the Snoozerland, which we're going to be talking about. Also have Ongi Kaplan-Gull, who's the Snoozerland Director. We're going to talk a lot about that. Then we have Alison Scott, the Executive Principal of Bella Vista School, who's now in partnership with Beit Izi on the Share Project. Bella Vista Share Project, and as usual, have with me Natalie Solomon, Dr. Natalie Solomon, who helps put the show together and is well versed. She's a psychologist working in Johannesburg. And Sharon, you're the first person up, the Global Professional Development Director. I don't want to do the introduction about Beit Izi Shapira. It's a well-known organization, but give us some background, and also we'll talk a little bit about the connection with the Hebrew Order of David, and of course the original connection back to South Africa from the Shapira family. So Sharon, welcome.
Thank you. Actually, I'd like to start with our South African roots, if that's okay with you, because that leads into Beit Izi Shapira. So first, of course, our namesake, Izi Shapira, who was a South African lawyer living in Johannesburg, and he helped to set up the Selwyn Segal Hostel, which I understand is still up and running today. There's such a strong connection with South Africa because, of course, Izi Shapira was South African, and Naomi Stichener, who is his daughter, was the founder of Beit Izi Shapira, and our former CEO was also South African, and a lot of our employees are South African. Even Ongi has a South African connection. She'll tell you about it a bit later. So it all started with Izi Shapira and this vision that he had, which was quite revolutionary, I think, 50, 60 years ago, about having, you know, every person with a disability has the right and deserves the opportunity to be fully included in the community. And this was quite revolutionary back then. And he made Aliyah. He immigrated to Israel following his children who immigrated to Israel. And he wanted to bring this vision to Israel. And on his first fundraising trip to the United States to raise money for this initiative, he passed away from a heart attack on the plane. And when the family were sitting Shiva, the Jewish morning, they decided that they were going to make his dream come true, and they were going to set up Beit Izi Shapira, and his daughter, Naomi Stichener, who's a community social worker, you know, picked this up and said, I'm going to lead this in Israel, and that's how Beit Izi Shapira started in 1980.
Right, and before he passed on, he managed to raise money from the Trumps, not Donald, but the other Trumps.
No political connection.
And in fact, the center's named after the Trump family, right?
So it's Beit Izi Shapira that sits on the Willie and Celia Trump campus. And yes, the Trump family are close relatives of the Shapiro family, and are amazing, amazing friends and supporters of Beit Izi Shapira since its inception 40 years ago.
So just give us a description of your role.
So my role is really managing all of the international connections that Beit Izi Shapira has. We've always had international connections, of course, mainly where Shapiro family resided across the world around fundraising, but more and more in the past few years around professional connections as well, sharing knowledge, international organizations, training and consultation overseas, and that work falls under my domain, my department.
So, of course, Beit Izi Shapira as an organization is very well known. I mean, it does wonderful work essentially. It works with children with disabilities. It has presence, as you say, around the world. Also, something in the order of 30,000 children are looked after annually. Is that correct?
So, So let me just give you the a bit of the overall picture, so you get us more of a sense of what Beit Izzi Shapiro does. So 40 years ago, we did start with 16 children with severe intellectual disabilities when it was established. It was a school for 16 children. And fast forward 40 years later, we now have an impact on about 500,000 people annually. And the people that we impact through our services. And we have an early intervention center and a school, and it's a one-stop shop. So all of the different types of services that children and people with disabilities need are all under one roof. But we also do research, and we do a lot of scaling up through the sharing of our knowledge and training professionals and advocacy. And that's how we impact on 500,000 people annually.
So we also have Ongi Kaplan-Gull. She's the Swaziland director, occupational therapist, and of course runs the Easy Senses section. So Ongi, do you want to just break in and give us some background to the Swaziland? I know it says Dutch origins, but it's made its presence felt to Israel at the Beit Izzi. And in fact, actually with the Swaziland, I have to tell you, I can highly recommend it. I was taken on a tour by Naomi Stuchina when I was in Israel a couple of years ago, and went into one of these Swazilands, and I lay down and I didn't want to leave because it just a big sense of calm came over me. And actually, I'm sorry I left. So Ongi, just in all seriousness, give us something, what we're talking about, what the Swaziland does, and the impact on the lives of kids with disabilities.
All right, thank you. Yes, so I understand you, because I started working in Beit Izzi Shapiro more than 16 years ago, and the same thing happened to me. I saw the Swaziland room and walked in and never left. So I completely understand you. So the Swaziland is a multisensory environment. It was invented in the Netherlands by an art therapist who worked with people with older people with learning disabilities, and he just wanted to create for them a really nice, warm environment where they can just be and have a good time. He didn't initially think of it as a therapeutic tool, and it was very successful. In 1993, an occupational therapist that worked in Beit Izzi Shapiro, Dr. Michelle Shapiro, no connection to, but the same name.
But also a South African.
Also a South African.
Oh, we've spawned a lot of Shapiros around the world.
So she was looking for some thinking out of the box environment to treat the children that she was working with in Beit Izzi Shapiro, and she stumbled upon a very small picture of a Swaziland room, and she went to the Netherlands and she met Ed Verhul, the person who invented it. And the minute she saw the room, she understood this could be an amazing therapeutic tool. And it was built, the first room was built in Beit Izzi Shapiro in 1993. And Michelle started, together with the other people working in Beit Izzi Shapiro, to develop it into a therapeutic tool and also to research it. And again, with great success. And we have two rooms in Beit Izzi Shapiro, but we've helped set up many, many other rooms in Israel and overseas. Michelle also helped the Bella Vista, I'm sure they'll talk about that, to set up their room. And we train a lot of people in Israel and overseas. And so it really is an amazing therapeutic tool. So if you want me to talk more about it, I can.
So the impression that one gets when one goes to this Beit Izzi Shapiro establishment is that it's cutting edge. I mean, the kids, when I was there, they had just been given, and I think it was still experimental at that stage, but each kid had an iPad, they were learning. These are kids with serious difficulties. And I mean, the Swaziland is actually a place because these kids have high levels of anxiety. They need calming down, and this is part of the process. They have a swimming pool there where kids get therapy in this environment. If one ever gets an opportunity to go there, you have to go there to really appreciate the magnitude of what is being done. Just at every level, the number of therapists who are working with the kids is a very, each one has kids working with them. It's very highly intensive training and working with these people. You have to appreciate what it is. Maybe I'm bubbling over because I was really blown away when I did go there to see what is being done.
Let's move to Alison Scott. She's the executive principal of the Ella Vista School, everybody, well-known school in Johannesburg. And Alison, you want to give us some background to the school? What's your connection with the New Zealand? And then we'll move on from there.
Right, thank you for that. Bella Vista School is a Johannesburg-based school with somewhat of a national print in terms of sharing what we know. Hence, we have a division of the school called Bella Vista Share, which specifically looks at professional development. But our New Zealand, or our now EC Centres journey, is a very special one. And when I listened to Michelle tripped upon a photograph that lured her, I'd say that we weren't dissimilar. We are a school with children who have mild to moderate learning difficulties, who have found mainstream difficult, very unique and individual reasons for being there. But a different population to base Izzy, typically at their center. And in a particular year, we were faced with overwhelming numbers of children identified with generalized anxiety, being treated on very serious medications from a young age. Not that that's ineffective. It's most certainly was indicated that the kids were struggling. And we have a paradigm at the school that have we done everything we know to do to assist this individual child? That's one of our big drivers. And we were looking for solutions, and I didn't find a photograph, but I did come across this idea called the Snoozlin' Room. And what I could see of it over internet searching was very much a stimulation room idea, but maybe a solution for what the challenges we were facing. So I tagged on to somebody's pilgrimage to Israel. She was going for an April holiday period. Asked if she would happen to go past Renana for 3 days and just see if they'd let us see the room. And that was our introduction to Beit Izzy and to Michelle Shapiro specifically. By stroke of good fortune, Michelle happened to be traveling through South Africa a couple of weeks later than that. And we literally brazenly hijacked her at the airport in her layover between Johannesburg and Cape Town and asked her, please come look at our school. Were we beginning to investigate the right or the wrong approach? So she did. She came and spent a wonderful time with us consulting, talking with our occupational therapist, looking at our school structure, and she said, this is a fit for your ethos as a school and what you're setting about to do. So we taped off a room, said that will be our Snoozlin' Room, and then set about to find funding to set it up for our children, and within 2 months we had wonderful support in that regard, and we were able to order our very first room. Bella Vista School only do things that are evidence-based, so there's no snake oil for us, in other words, and it was really important for us to go to source in terms of the evidence behind this practice and what is the best way to use that room as a tool. Knowing from the start you can't produce a silver bullet in a room. What is it about the room and what tool does it offer us? So we started that journey. We did training with Michelle. We've looked strong incubator with our guidance from since 2015. We've had two on-the-ground trainings. We visited with a delegation there. And we're really, really excited for our partnership. I made commitment to donors that when we understood it in our school, when we understood its impact and how to use it, we were committed to sharing this with the wider South African community. This is a tool that speaks to lifestyle, and I think it speaks to quality of life for the persons participating. And we've seen extraordinary responses as little people of all ages in primary school context have found what it is to reach a calm state. And when they have a calm state, they can learn. And when we've got them available for learning and therapy, they make good progress. So at the moment, Bella Vista is seamless with Snoozlin. We can't imagine functioning without it as part of our practice.
I only really have one question at the end of it, to everyone. How come it took so long to get you? I mean, roots in South Africa, you have cutting edge stuff. Why did it take so long to get you?
Well, we've actually had when Alison was saying that Michelle was en route to Cape Town, she was en route to do a training at Highlands House in Cape Town. So it wasn't the first Snoozlin room. It was, but with Bella Vista, it was the first Snoozlin room in an educational framework in South Africa. But you're right. It's a good question, and I'm just glad we finally got there.
So just a little bit of a punt for Baitizi Shapiro, because recently, I don't know if it's common knowledge, but Naomi Stuchina, the founder of Baitizi Shapiro, was recently the recipient of the Israel Prize for Lifetime Achievement and Special Contribution to Society in 2020. It took 60 years to get to that point. Now, I mean, with such an amazing institution, and this institution is not only in Renana, I mean, it works with in some other areas where they work with Arab kids as well. You also have a facility in Tel Aviv. So, I mean, it is a part of really the scene for disabled or disadvantaged, not disadvantaged, but kids with difficulties. And, you know, it took a long time to get to that point. And actually, from what I understand, this prize is normally given to professors, doctors, you know, people and Naomi Stuchina is she's a humble person. I've met her. She took us around the facility and couldn't have given a prize to a better organization than Baitizi Shapiro. So really, I have to say that it's well deserved.
Can I hop in here and also ask a little bit for people who don't know about what a multisensory therapeutic environment is?
Very much. Please tell us.
Yes, please. Please go ahead.
So I'll jump right in and answer that. So the multisensory environment is an environment where you have different equipment that can be individually switched on or off. And it's each equipment answers to several sensory systems. So, for example, that we would have something that's called a bubble tube. That's like a plastic tube filled with water. And when you switch it on, you see colors changing and the water inside it bubbles, and the bubbles go slowly up and down. So a person can see it. That's the sense of sight. And he can hear the bubbling water. But also if you touch the bubble tube, you can feel the vibration. And we process vibration through our deep touch sense. So that would answer to three of our senses, sight, sound, and touch. And each, and that's just one example. We have many other different pieces of equipment. And you can design this environment according to the sensory needs of the client. Other people were talking about levels of anxiety, but I think it's very important to say that primarily this room is really, really good for sensory processing disorders. And a lot of the children that we work with have that, sensory processing disorders. And when you sensory processing disorders means that you experience the world differently. So it might be too loud or too bright. So just imagine going in somewhere and things are too bright and too loud and somebody is now expecting you to learn something. You can't do that. You're busy fending off all of the disturbing stimuli. So when we go into the multisensory therapeutic room, we can switch things on and off and design the environment according to the sensory needs of that person, whether he needs it to be a bit darker or lighter or with music or without music. And then when he now feels good and he is now modulated, he can now be free to learn, to participate, to, when we talk about kids, to play, to have fun, which is something that you can't take for granted at all with the population that we work with. So that is my, I think, trying to explain what it is.
So basically, you're telling us that every home should have one.
No.
Well, I don't think every home should have one, but you can definitely, when understanding the principles of that environment and the ability to design environment according to sensory needs, then you can do all kinds of things in different environments. I can tell you that for me, having worked in these rooms for so long, wherever I go, I think of that. I went to a mall here in Israel and I went to the public toilets and the lights there were bright and too bright and like flickering. And, you know, immediately I was thinking of someone with a sensory modulation disorder. He wouldn't be able to go there because of those lights. It's not accessible to him. It's not sensory accessible to him. You know, when we think about accessibility, it's not just, you know, for people on a wheelchair to go, you know, somewhere. It's also that. So you can take principles of that and to any environment, and it's actually important to do that.
Yeah. So this is the Hebrew Order of David Hour. We have an hour once a week, every Thursday. We talk about, that's for an hour from 6 to 7. We talk about all things pertaining to fundraising, to, you know, things where the Hebrew Order of David has been involved. And in fact, we have lodges in England, we have lodges in America, we have lodges in South Africa and in Israel. We have been involved at different levels of the, with Beit Izzy. And in fact, every year in England, not this year because of the COVID situation, but every year they have a golf day, and that golf day, the fundraising, and there's a bingo evening, they raise money, which they funnel towards, Beit Izzy is one of the recipients. They've done that for many years. And so we have been involved. We know it well. We have as our guest tonight, first Natalie Solomon, who we haven't heard from. She's helped us to put the show together. She's a psychologist working in Johannesburg. We have, Sharon Yeshekel Oron, I hope I got that right, he's the Global Professional Development Director at Beit Izzy. We have Ongi Kaplan-Gull, the Snoozeland Director, and we have a simple name, Alison Scott, but a powerful woman in her own right, the Executive Principal of Bella Vista School, and they're involved in bringing the Snoozeland room, which we've been talking about, to South Africa, to the Bella Vista School, in a project which they call SHARE, and because they're involved in similar training and similar care of children who have disabilities and who need this kind of treatment. Have I outlined the situation correctly?
Yeah.
Natalie, you give us, Natalie, we haven't heard from you, so tell us a little bit about your connection.
What I want to ask a little bit is in terms of training, how does one, you know, does one need specific training? Is it something, you know, how does one learn about working in this kind of multi-sensory therapeutic environment?
I can speak from my side, given, you know, I'm not a health professional, but responsible for an educational institution that incorporates a multidisciplinary team. And when we set out on this, one thing our awareness was really heightened for is proper, wise, and professional training. We knew from the start that what we would speak so much to the sensory somatic system of a person, that we needed to step carefully and thoughtfully and very mindfully around the needs of each individual child. We couldn't unilaterally apply something. So the training from us as real novices, sensory integration specialists within our OTs, we have speech and language therapists who have sensory modulation training. But myself as an educator, that's not really my full field of work. So we went first to understand the theories and principles, and then to have practical training and experience, and internally to keep our saw sharp with one another around our observations, what we saw happening in sessions, invaluably to be able to consult with the team at Beit Izzy to how are we doing, is this looking how you might expect the pattern to look. Lots of input from the families of children experiencing the room, and working in such a team that your feedback and training becomes ongoing based on your observations, and then you can match that back to case studies and to observations of others. I would say to anybody looking to implement this as a tool for intervention, Your training is really critical, and it's important, I think, to seek supervision and professional peer review groups or community of practice where you can talk and discuss and learn all the time. And I'd like to just make one observation of it from the position I'm in, is that the children have been our greatest teachers. We have learned to deeply allow a child-directed approach to tap into their needs with our observations and to go with them on a journey towards modulation, not set a program which we hope simply achieves that goal. So learning is all over. It's a 360. But for us, it certainly began with deep professional learning and critical analysis of our own work as we were with the pool.
And taking us to the rest
can
of the
can I jump in?
Yes, please, yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I, of course, totally agree with everything Alison has said. I do want to give you a more global perspective in the sense that we've met with so many wonderful professionals and organizations that have heard of the multisensory environment and have spent a lot of money to establish these environments in their organizations, in their schools or hospitals. And because their staff never received training, and Ongi will say a bit about that in a second, the room is wonderful. It's a chill-out room. It's a gymboree kind of thing. But it isn't being used to its full potential. And so we always say, if you're looking for a chill out room or a gymboree, it's a lot cheaper to just build a chill out room or a gymboree. But if you're looking for a therapeutic tool and you want to maximize the use of the room and maximize on your investment, you really need to get properly trained. And there's a whole methodology around what makes a multisensory environment a multisensory therapeutic environment. And maybe Ongi, you can say something about that aspect.
Yes, thank you. So what Sharon said, I totally agree with it. The room, and I think, Stan, you know, it's so amazing and it's so out of this world. And sometimes it's confusing because the room is amazing, but it's only amazing for a few minutes. After that, when you're in there with a client, you need to bring something more, and you need to have a therapeutic approach. And we call our therapeutic approach, which we developed over many, many years, the enabling therapist. So the enabling, and this is what we teach in our courses, because the enabling therapist is a therapist that knows the sensory situation of the clients, knows how to use and adapt the room, knows how to, on the one hand, like Alison said, go with the client and mm-hmm. listen and, you know, give him that sense of control and achievement and enjoyment. But at the same time, if we want to work on goals, we need to have measurable goals. And mm-hmm. we do that. We do have that in our multisensory therapeutic environment. And we document it. And this is what allows us to research it. And this is what allows for this tool to be evidence-based. And all of this we bring in our courses, which we've been teaching for many, many years. And we've trained thousands of people.
So now the profile of the, what you call the client, the child is, what is the profile of these children? Are they from, are they functional? Are you trying to move them towards some sort of, meaningful place in society? What is the objective and where are they coming from? Why is it necessary to have this intervention?
Yes. So, in Bate Easy, we work with children from the age of 6 months old to 12 years old. And I can say a few words about that, but it's important for me to say that you can have multisensory therapeutic environments, that will service any, population. We have many old age homes in Israel that have set up multisensory therapeutic environments and do amazing job, and work with their clients that would be, the people living there. And for example, a lot of amazing work is done with people who have Alzheimer's. And also you have rooms like this in hospitals, that work with, cancer patients, and you have rooms like that in schools. So it doesn't have to be, this is why I use the word client, it doesn't have to be that specific baby that I work with at Beit Izzy Shapiro. But answering your question, the children that we work here with have severe developmental difficulties, both motor and cognitive, and what we want to do is help them achieve their best potential in life and close a little bit the gap in their development. So we have all of their whatever they need to do. For example, if I work with a 1-year-old, you know, we think what does a 1-year-old need to do? So they need to eat and sleep and crawl and start maybe to walk and play. Play is a very big thing for children. And those would be our goals. And we will sometimes decide to use the multisensory therapeutic environment as our tool to do that, especially with the children that have sensory disorders, because it's there in that environment that they're now free to, as I say, interact and play and learn new things.
You also have state-of-the-art software. Can you talk to the software that you have in the rooms? Because it's quite amazing.
So you probably are referring to the interactive flooring system.
Yes.
So the interactive flooring system is something that exists for quite a few years now. We decided in Beit Izzy Shapiro to install it inside our multisensory therapeutic environment. You have something that is being screened on the floor or wall, and it works on movement. So when you move, something happens. So it might be a game of popping bubbles. So if you move your arm or leg or head, a bubble would pop. So it really teaches children the whole concept of cause and effect. It's highly enjoyable. It really gives them a lot of motivation. I always remember this child I worked with. Like the first day we installed this system, I brought him. He was 2 years old at the time and he had Down syndrome, and he could crawl, but he didn't want to crawl. He had a very low motivation for movement. And we put him on that, on the floor with the games of the bubbles. And you can slowly see how he understood that he needed to move in order to pop the bubbles. And by like a few minutes later, he was crawling all over the place because it was so motivational and fun. And you have many, many different games that you can use. And it all works the same, movement. So, of course, children in wheelchairs can use it. You can even sit next to it. And if you roll a ball, then the movement of the ball will make something happen. So it's very exciting.
So you can't really measure success on in a normal kind of way. I suppose you need to sit... do you have high expectations when these kids come in, or are these standards set some way that you know what the outcome's going to be and you work towards it? How do you measure whether this is providing this kind of result? I mean, parents bring their kids there. I guess they're looking for an outcome. And they're relying on you now to bring them from a state which probably they're not functional to, state of functionality in some sort of meaningful place. Is this the way that you work at Paytizi and also at Bella Vista? Am I being a little bit harsh?
No, you're not at all. And I think Ongi is very well positioned as a therapist, an occupational therapist, to talk about goals and measurable goals and how you bring it in. I'm going to give you a very anecdotal kind of example. Our practitioners certainly have their goals for the children, and they are very specific. And not all children need or want to go in the room, actually. It's not something that you would apply broadly. And these are the kinds of things we note with interest, and I put that forward sensitively and carefully. What is it to phone a mum and say, come down to the school, your son whose stutter renders him unintelligible, and that's his barrier to being in the mainstream. And we've noticed that in the room, he's over the weeks stuttering less, and today he's not stuttering. What is it for a child who experiences debilitating conditions like CRIPS, which is a referred pain syndrome, that is so out of our scope of practice at a school, but they experience pain where there is no injury, damage or pain in their body, and it's debilitating enough they can't participate in the mainstream. What is it when you notice a child over time, while dealing with so many other things, begins to move away from that and is experiencing times in her day and times in the room where that has become secondary for her and then settled. So I'm not sitting doing a U magazine kind of, all these stories. I'm sharing, as somebody in an organization of care where we definitely have therapeutic goals and things we're working towards, but we see quality of life happening in these extraordinary kind of ways. It's not a healing, but it is a journey of healing.
I suppose every gain is a momentous occasion, really, because you're coming from a very low base, so you need to really, every success is a success.
And that's where Ongi is so well positioned to respond, Ongi.
Yes, I want to say that this word called participation, this is what we strive for. We want for every child to be able to participate to the best of his ability, to the best of his what he wants, what his family wants and needs in his life. And we will see what he needs, what hinders his participation, and what can we do to now further his ability to participate to the best of his ability. And it's a big word, participation, but, you know, when you think about it, sometimes a family would just want to have the child sit with them in the Shabbos meal. And for some reasons he can't, because maybe he can't sit, or maybe because he can't eat, or maybe because he can't stand the noise. And then we talk with the families all the time, figuring out what is their best, what do they need, what do we want this child to participate in. And, yes, and then we take this information and we make it into measurable goals together, yes, with the family. I think this is something that we've been doing in Beit Izzi Shapira for many, many years. And it's very, very unique the way we work with the families. Because in the beginning of the year, we sit with the family and together with them, we set up these goals. And for each family and each child, it's unique and it's individual. This is how we work. The whole, multidisciplinary team together with the family. I'm an occupational therapist and I work in the early intervention center, and we are a family-centered center. This is what we do. We treat the family, and we have groups for the grandparents and for the brothers, and this is how we help the quality of life. And it's not necessarily promising the family that by the time the child leaves, he will be walking. Yes. Sometimes that's not going to happen. But his quality of life and his ability to participate will be better.
Can I jump in for a second?
Please.
Ongi, would you mind please telling the story of the oral hygiene? The oral hygiene story, I call it, because you do see amazing things happening inside the multisensory environment, but you also see amazing things happening outside of the environment, things that you realize in the environment and then can transfer out of the environment. And that also affects the quality of life of families. So, Ongi, you know which story I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I was treating this boy, he had a lot of sensory disorders, and we would go into the multisensory therapeutic environment, and I noticed that what he really, really loved doing was put his face and mouth on the bubble tube. And remember, I told you before that the bubble tube vibrates, and he really, really loved doing that. And one time I met his mother on just outside, and she was telling me that he was not going to come to Beit Izzi tomorrow, because he needs to go into hospital to have his teeth fixed under general anesthesia, and that the situation of his teeth is really, really bad, and that is because he won't brush his teeth. And I asked her, well, of course you've probably tried the electric toothbrush. Because, you know, thinking he loves vibration. And she said, no, I haven't tried it. And I said to her, you know, I think he really, really should, because he loves feeling the vibration around his mouth. And she did. And she phoned me the next day and she said, I can't believe it. We brushed his teeth for the first time ever.
Wow.
And it was really amazing. You know, such a small thing, but so, so major and big for them.
So at the time, unfortunately, when you're talking in these kind of sessions, you can't cover everything. The time has just flown by. Normally, what I would like to do at the last, what I like to do in the, towards the end of the show, is to give each of you an opportunity, each of the guests an opportunity to say something about themselves, how they came to this point, and a little bit of, you know, give yourselves a little bit of a pun. So Ron, we started with you, so I bet you're going to end with Alison starting off talking. She's the executive principal at Bella Vista School. And Alison, give us a little bit of background to yourself and punt for Bella Vista. And also, if you want to give your the details, contact details of the school or the website, etc.
Thank you. So we're at bellavista.org.za. And I'm an educator. I'm a committed educator, deeply invested in the education of children aged ECD to high school. But what I would like to take the opportunity to do, Stan, is to say what I'm most excited about, and even having this conversation this evening, is that Bella Vista share our professional development training arm and Beit Izzy Shapiro's team and Izzy Sensor's program is going to respond to that question you had on why has it taken time to get here. And we're on the eve of launching that collaboration. We've been working together a while, and in August 5th, we'll be beginning to open those doors to extend high-quality training with trainers from Beit Izzy and from Bella Vista School to bring this impact to the South African region in a deeper sense, taking rooms that perhaps were bought and lie obsolete, and upskilling and growing the capacity of the therapist. And Ongi introduced that, to equip therapists further as enabling therapists, and to lift the quality of children's lives. That's what we're about at Bella Vista.
So Alison Scott from Bella Vista, she's the executive principal. It's a school that punches far above its weight. You can see forward looking, outward looking, and I wish you really good luck with this project. It's an amazing situation to be able to really like to visit it at some point. Ongi, would you like to give us, Ongi Kaplan-Gull? She's a school and director. And just give us a bit of background to yourself and, you know, tell us about yourself and about what you do in a little bit more detail. And yeah, contact details, of course, are made easy. Anybody who's going to Israel should make the supportive call. I hope that they would be given the same hospitality that I was given when I was there. I was amazed.
We promise.
Thank you.
Ongi.
Thank you. Yeah. So I think I'll tell you that a little story about myself, that I lived in Johannesburg for a few years when I was 13, 14, 15 years old. I went to King David's High School in Lynxfield. And so South Africa and Johannesburg has a really warm place in my heart. And when I came to work in Beit Izzy Shapiro, I didn't initially know the connection to South Africa, but when I learned of it, I just felt right at home. And really, what we do in Beit Izzy Shapiro, the way we treat and the way we view people with disabilities is really inspiring for me, and is I think the right way to go. And it's a great privilege for me to be able to be part of this project where we are sharing our knowledge and really spreading the word about this amazing therapeutic tool that can help so much. Especially for people who are dealing with sensory processing disorders, something that is not always known. So I feel honored to be able to be connected to that. So I thank you.
Thank you. And it was Ongi Kaplan-Gull. Now I'll talk to Sharon Yeheskel.
Yeheskel. Yes, that's my Iraqi side, Yeheskel, yes.
I'll get it right by the end of the show, you know what I mean? Sharon, give us a little background to you, what you do, what your role is at Beit Izzy. I know you work closely with Naomi, but you're a person in your own right and working with an amazing organization. So what was yours?
Yeah, thank you. So my background is international relations, and I've been working with Beit Izzy Shapiro for 12 years. And aside from, of course, the amazing humanitarian work that this organization does, and its vision, which I connect with on a very, very deep level, I love the international partnerships. I love learning from other people, bringing new knowledge to Israel, sharing knowledge that we've developed, developed with other people. And we couldn't have asked for a better partner than Bella Vista School and headed by Alison Scott. We could, just could have not. We share the exact same values, the strive for excellence. And it's just, we fell in love the minute that we met each other. So we're so looking forward to this collaboration. I'm sure we'll do great things together.
Great. Yeah. So Natalie, you ran out of road, but Natalie, Dr. Natalie Solomon, she's a force behind what we do here on the HND Hour. She helps us put together amazing show. And this has been one of, can I say, one of the best that we've done. Not because of the only, not only because of the personalities involved, because of the actual work that you do and this initiative, which really, I want to see go from strength to strength. I really want to come and visit it. I'm sure that, actually you'll set up a visit for me when COVID's over. Maybe I can spend the night in this,
Maybe.
Yeah. But thank you ladies for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.